Shield Drive. New Reel. Power Pro. Surface Bait. Big Net. No Clue. Steve's Book. Podcast. Muskie.
Muskie 360 Podcast. Jay.
Stevie.
How loose are you?
Loose as a goose, baby.
Loose. Loose. I ain't nice. No, sir. Jay, what's your favorite sport?
Oh, well, muskie probably, huh?
Muskie fishing. Anyway, guys, we're about there. I just got off a plane. From freaking Florida. What?
Yeah.
I flew down for one purpose. We're going to have a little video coming out of the best ice out early muskie season baits. You go, well, you can't fish muskies after ice out. Bull crap. Yes, you can in a lot of states. So what are the best presentations? I'm not here to talk regs. I don't write them. I just fish around them, right? So Jay's working on that. Which are going to be the like top maybe 10, 15 baits that are downsized for that early ice out or pre-spawn thing. So it might be big rubber, Jay. It might be krakens and jerk baits and quad dogs or meat grinders and tailgaters, or it might be rattle traps. Jay's working on that. Other than that, Jay, we got some new freaking things happening. What is up with this Spanky Baits hard bait? What?
Oh, that, what is it? M7.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. We got a new, we got a new player in the game.
We got a new player in the game. Yeah, I guess he got rights to that and, produced several colors. We got him in. Looks like a nice little twitch bait, kind of a shallowish mid running. I believe it'll peak out 4 to 6 if memory serves.
Mm-hmm.
Good looking little bait, solid plastic. So it's not that hollow tinny ABS style,
right?
It's a very tough resin material. That's... and they just came in, have not gotten them in the water, obviously.
No, I mean, they
but speaking of water, Steve, I think you can kind of declare yesterday ice out in the area.
Yee.
Everything I drove past on the way to work and from work looked to be completely ice-free, except the ponds. It's so cold out right now, the ponds are freezing, and the big lakes are open.
Right.
So it's kind of a bizarre twist. Action, yep. So, yeah.
So I got a text from Don James there at the old frickin' figure eight.
Yeah, we got some baits from him today, too.
Did you get the back in blacks?
They're back-ordered.
They're back-ordered. So... Goblin King, you got a couple of those. Shad Daddy's out of stock on the tailgater. Back in Black will be there very shortly. We're trying to keep up with these. Dawn is not that far away from the shop, so he ships them as needed. So yeah, we'll get them. We'll get caught up. That's the fun thing every time we put a bait out. It's like, argh! Right? Mm-hmm. You never know. So Dawn will get those, and he makes the heck out of some baits. Oh my goodness, sorry. Whoa, I just got Mexican food, Jay. What's this? Fish Lab BBZ Mimic Tails.
Yeah, the old Bioshad Gizzard. Or are you looking at that replacement tail?
That replacement tail. What is that a replacement tail for?
It's small. It's like a little 3-inch thing. It's something you could put on the end of a predominantly, I'd say, spinner baits, safety pin style versus inlines. Yeah, you know, it's something different, little shaddy kind of tail deal.
You got this BO shad.
Yeah, the old BO shad. That's
old stinker.
It's cool looking.
No, why not? If you like, it's a swim bait, and it's from, I think one of the big boys makes bio shad stuff, right?
Yeah, Fish Lab.
Berkeley. Who owns Fish Lab?
Akuma.
Akuma Matata.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Akuma Potato.
Tomato.
Tomato. Yeah. Akuma Potato.
So that thing's on the top of the list for getting in the water and getting some underwater footage as soon as it warms up a little bit here.
Not long. So,
nope.
It'll be interesting. You will know. You should know. A new rollout of the MuskieShop.com came out.
It did.
If you've not been on the website, there's now a quick view. Whoa. Right?
Hello.
And a few other features here for your scrolling pleasure, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a scroller?
Yeah, I am. Yep. The new website, you're not going to notice immediate changes in it, but the speed of shopping and scrolling and looking at pictures,
it's
and
way faster.
The full skinny on it. It's just a lot more efficiently quick.
I wish I knew somebody that did the internet, Jay.
Oh, me too.
It'd be cool if we know an internet person. Anyway, check it out. Just a couple new features to make your musky shopping endeavors even more pleasurable. Also, we want to announce it's all you can eat liver and onions every Thursday at the Musky Shop Cafe.
Is that Fred and Elmer's cooking you're talking about?
Yeah, that's that we just
they're into that stuff.
Yeah, the taco truck we're putting out there. Mm-hmm. Remember, Kmart used to have a restaurant, Jay.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. Well, we
right
stole,
by the Blue Light Special.
We stole their menu, folks. If you remember the Kmart Cafe, it's coming to the Musky Shop this summer. It's basically liver and onions every day.
Beautiful.
Okay, there's no moving on. If I have to explain that to you, don't listen. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I got to go see my good friend Joe down in the sandy beaches of Florida. We stuck our toes in the sand, Jay.
Oh, must have been fun.
I ate the best crab cakes and the best crab ravioli of my life.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was like, hey, try the crab ravioli. I'm like, I don't know. Best thing I've ever had in my mouth. Anyway, so went and hung out with him. Jay will put the video out here very shortly. I leave in a matter. It's hours, Jay. Can you believe it? Hours.
Okay. Yep. You're hours. For straight to the Netherlands or straight to the Netherlands? Or what's the schedule?
The hinterlands.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to go challenge Tim in combat. Right? As a matter of pride. We might
He's a seasoned veteran, man.
Right. So it might just boil down to hinterland standoff, you know, and we might fight on the top of a volcano.
Now, his brother's going, too, so he can mediate.
He has two brothers.
Okay.
Both of them are taller than me.
I know.
I'm the shortest in the sad little fat man, chubby little loser. So somehow I'm the shortest out of that group, which is scary. He texted me today, so I'm not flying over. They're already on him. Freaking 141 centimeter pike on the Kraken already.
How's that translate to inches?
It's big.
It's big.
I don't know.
Okay.
It's what is that? Hold on. I need to ask. cm 2 inches. Thank you, Google. 141.
Let me grab a tape measure here.
It's not freaking 141. Because that'd be 55. Hold on. What did I say it was?
Let me look. Yeah, 141 is 55 and a half.
I'm an idiot. He texted me.
I'm talking millimeters, huh?
No. Ah! We were talking about that and stuck in my head. I'm not trying to BS. Oh, 114. Sorry.
114.
114. 44. I'll take it. That's a dandy pike. I'm looking at the text, and it was like I just inverted those because I have the ACDCs. So I'm sitting in the sand, Jay, right? Digging a hole at a restaurant, and Joe said, "You have the worst case of ACDC I've ever seen."
Yeah.
Which is, I think he tried to say ADHD. What is it? ADHD?
And he said, close. He was thinking of guitars at
right.
the time.
He said, "You have the worst." Beth Booker dies laughing. And I said, "Yes, I have the worst case of ACDC you've ever seen."
You know what he meant. It doesn't matter.
Rock! File!
Joe doesn't even own a Gibson SG.
Ah, now he's got 335. Sorry. I am stricken by the ACDCs, folks. So it's a 44-inch pike. Not a one. I don't know centimeters. You know?
Better get used to it.
Oh, here we go, boys. Very shortly. So there'll be a special Euro, right, episode of Muskie Shop TV very shortly, Jay, where we will eat crumpets, right? And I don't know, what do you do in Europe? Eat beans? The English eat beans for breakfast. That's kind of gross. Can you imagine waking up?
Scandinavian countries? I'm not sure.
Can you imagine waking up and you're like, "Give me them beans.
Yeah.
I want some hot beans." British food is disgusting. Let's just get that out of the way.
It is.
Oh,
are we in store for possibly a Netherlands podcast next week?
We'll see. We're staying on a houseboat in some brackish water. So we'll see. Okay. If nothing else, I'll record something heinous on my phone with three people that can't speak English. I'll try my best. Me try good. I'm going to avoid them beans, Jay.
Mm-hmm. When you're in that brackish water too, you know, you probably got a shot at big northern pike and potential shark.
That would be cool. Like,
you never know.
Shark. I don't know how brackish, there's got to be a cutoff on the salinity, but it's literally fishing fjords.
Yeah.
The fjords.
Incredibly deep stuff, right?
Oh, it's fathoms. I don't even know what a fathom is. It just sounds cool when I say it. Jay, ask how deep it is.
How deep is it, Steve?
Fathoms.
Yeah.
That sounded cool as shit.
Fathoms like 3 yards, I think.
Fjord. In the fjord. It'll be interesting. It's a whole new experience. Basically, these fish are moving these weird staging places to spawn, but they're the apex predator, period. I mean, a 44-inch pike's nothing to scoff at. They got four today. So we're going to shoot that. That'll be cool. Kraken. Magnus, Jay.
The new one.
Yeah. The pike love them little wiggle, 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 wiggle. Can't tell what it is. But anyway. So, other than that, Musky Innovations, they have a new trolling rod. Pro Musky Trolling.
Yes.
Are you a professional musky troller? You need to troll the pro trolling rod. What do they have? 7 foot and 8 foot.
Mm-hmm.
Reasonably priced. Yeah, not bad. They always make an affordable rod. I've fished theirs before, kind of like a protest at one point. A company that's made in Wisconsin got really pricey, and it was before Shield rods, and I kind of fished those because I went, you don't have to have a $4 million rod. But also, too, you got the Fenwick stuff and all this. But anyway, long story short, let's talk about some interesting prospects for this early ice sale. I mean, Dr. Bob, by the way, Jay, I want to tell you something. I begged, I pleaded, right? I said, "Dr. Bob, you have such an interesting purview into the world of musky fishing. You're a physicist, but yet you musky fish, right?" So he's a genius and a fool all at once.
I suppose.
Right. You know, what a great combo. Dr. Bob's going to write some scientific articles for the app. How great is that? You know, wonderful stuff. So he's working on some stuff here, but we were talking about early ice out. He's headed to Iowa. I've got some intel from Doc Boy Randy, Minnesota. He winters in Minnesota, right, which is far warmer than Canada. It's like wintering in summer for him, right? Wintering in Canada is just far too cold. So he winters in Minnesota, which is like spring for him. But a lot of open water up there where there's a closed season, obviously. Wisconsin's closed season. Illinois, Iowa, there's some definitely some opportunities. If you're in Eagle River, Minocqua, anywhere in the North Woods, all you got to do is cross over to the UP, Jay.
Yep.
The UP's wide open, right? So there's some options, and it is a matter of, are they spawning or not? Obviously, we're not going to target spawning muskies, but you have some things. So a couple things that come to mind for me, these pre-spawn muskies, obviously jerk baits. We've talked about the Kraken, freaking bulldogs, quad dog, some options. But Jay, what kind of like pops in your head? You've seen a lot of early ice outs in the North Woods. What's happening? What are you thinking?
For lures?
No, Jay, for freaking songs.
You said what's happening.
For dance songs at the club.
Commodore, presentation wise,
Brick House.
Well, I'm with you on jerk baits, obviously. That would be, has always been my kind of number one deal. Not as much glide bait, but more of the dive rise thing. So now Titan's out, Titan Junior. You know, weighted Suix is always a good old standby in the back in the day. It's something you work slow and erratic, so, and it's got not neutral buoyancy, but it's got a slow rise to it. So you work the adjacent areas to spawning areas, and cover wood always seems to be a good producer on certain bodies of water early season. But you know, a lot of people in the North Woods, and this is we're in a very unusual pattern.
It's
obviously
strange, yeah.
the whole area, the whole upper Midwest, you know, in the past, especially in some of the waters, say like Three Lakes Chain and Eagle River Chain, they have a tendency to produce on bucktails when other bodies of water don't.
No matter
it's
what.
It's just one of those things. You've been there. You've seen it too. It's like, okay, they shouldn't be eating bucktails right now.
Let me preface Jay's statement with this. Remember the day we went out and we got hamburgers, right? And the dog was like, go away. We're not open. It was like 5 minutes away. Like, oh, you can eat now. Remember that day?
Yeah.
It was a freaking 35, 40 degree cold front. And we still got fish on bucktails.
It was cold front.
It was like, I've never been that cold in July in the North Woods ever.
Yeah, it was late July, wasn't it?
And the water temps falling like a stone is like bucktails. And you're like, how? How is this even a thing? So carry on, my wayward son.
Well, that's exactly what I was going for. It's just like there are quirky little situations that certain local waters adapt to. And it's just like if you can recognize that or talk to someone that knows the water before, you know, scouting out what might be a new water for you. If you're doing a trip up here in certain areas east of Minocqua, those are the two bodies of water that are pretty big, pretty popular, and pretty full of muskies that I would say are high on the list for something like a MEPS muskie killer, a MEPS number 5, which is a small little half ounce, tiny. That stuff works. Not that jerk baits wouldn't work. I mean, even that day we were getting action actually on, I think, did I get one or two on Titan Junior?
You lost one on Titan Junior, had one blow up on it, and we're like, man, just throw them a bucktail.
Yeah, and then it was kind of a bucktail pattern developed. So, number one jerk baits. Yep.
Not to get you off, because that day was an odd day, like a cold front early season kind of deal where you scored a donkey of a smallie on a Titan Junior, right?
Oh yeah, right.
And I had one come in probably 40, 41. It was on fire. And wouldn't remember that figure eight fish. And we're like, come on. And you got the camera like, dude, how is this thing not eating right now? Right?
Yes.
Then you smack a donkey smallmouth and literally you felt the air. It was like somebody turned the AC on. And it went, woo. We tried some deep stuff and we're like, nah, let's go back to what we're doing. The water temp was falling. You could watch it. It was like quickly falling, but you know, cold front stuff. You know, the open water deal, I often notice that when we hit that like 44 degree water temp, things start gravitating up, right? Because you will get a gradient from the bottom to the surface. Obviously, in the Northwoods, Jay, what can you fish for? Let's say it's open water. You're just saying you drove to work today. So Tomahawk's open, right?
I'm assuming it is.
Well, yeah, not Tom, what do you drive by? You drive by
Minocqua Chain looked wide open. Big Arborvita looked wide open. Right. Those are bigger bodies of water. And so it's real cold right now. We're actually below normal all week, so it's freezing at night. You know, it was a high of 32 today. You can see where I'm going with this. You know, like the real small stuff is kind of skimming over, but I hope it comes back next week and we start getting.
Let's say this. Let's say next week it kind of is mild and it's not freezing, right? What can you fish for right now, legally?
Nothing except panfish.
Okay.
Can you believe that? Yeah.
Okay. So you could fish for bluegill and what, crappie?
Yeah.
What else? Perch? Did perch fall in that?
Yep.
Okay. You could. You could go jig perch, panfish, you know, fish a live bait, but get a feel for water temps and staging. Right? Get out there and what? There's nothing wrong. I'll tell you what. If there was a 55-inch bluegill, I'd stop fishing muskies tomorrow. Right? You know? So it's commensurate to the size of the gear. But there's something to be glommed from understanding staging. So, Jay, we've been in the podcast since God created the planet and Jay and Steve started the podcast is what it feels like some days, right? You know, like every freaking Sunday, here we are, Jay, you know, death in the family podcast, you have sickness podcast, right? There's no, we don't take off days. You know why? Because JSE ain't no bitch. So here we are, no matter what, right? You know?
Rolling with the G. I don't know what that means.
I don't know. Jay's got diarrhea. Still doing it. Edited it out. Basically every week, I have to deal with that. Jay, it's horrible. We need to talk about it. The sounds, Jay. The sounds. But nonetheless, there's some things you can glom from water temperature and staging on your individual body of water. Where I'm not advocating by no means getting out and throwing anything with musky size, but this is a learning year for early ice out is what I'm getting at. If you're relegated to not fishing it. So in 2 years, maybe next year, you know, you got your El Ninos, your El Ninas, your whatever. Hell, Jay, they say global warming. Basically, the water will be boiling next year, right?
Or by midsummer.
I'm telling you, that's another thing. Let me just back that up. It's going to be hot water. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah.
My water temps are not right. We had a cold day today. I'm going, oh, goodness. Because Mr. Record Keeper, Mr. Note Keeper, I'm going, this is way too warm, way too warm, way too warm. Your open water. I've not looked. Hold on. A really good.
So your water has been maintaining an above average throughout the last month or so, is what you're saying? Yeah. Late winter. Okay.
Let's see. Just a thought, right?
Pulling out the data.
No. So summer in Australia is December through February, by the way. Right. Let's see. Yeah, they had a warmer than usual summer. So, that just is what it is. I would expect we're going to be hot. And it's going to be fast and furious early. You know, a lot of times, Jay, if you're waiting for a late ice, which we've done. Late ice means sluggish fish. And By the time Muskie's open, I bet you these things have recouped or just on the cusp. What do you think?
Up here, I believe they will be. Yeah, they will have for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is early ice usually means hot weather. I could be wrong. You know, but if you look at, like I said, the different hemispheres and what their weather has been, it's slightly indicative of what's coming our way. But
there's a there's a farmer's almanac prediction. You know, believe that as much as you want to, but they're saying the upper Midwest is supposed to be hotter and humid and rainy and cloudy, higher than usual amounts of all that stuff for all summer.
Jay keeps a boll weevil in his pocket. Check the weather.
Boll weevil. Okay.
You ever done that?
No.
Okay.
We don't have them up here.
I don't even know what it is. Just kind of weird. But nonetheless, you can. Sorry, I'm an idiot. Jay, I got off a plane this morning. I've slept like 2 hours. It never ends. Constant adventure. But you'll have probably a truncated variation of your season last year, is what I'm thinking, right? Where some of these bodies of water, Jay, say in the north, you're going to be on blades. But I'm just telling you, if you have open water, right now is your chance at a pig. Right? Absolute pig for big presentation. We talked about that. Just my thought, Jay. Well, we will get into a little bit of, what do you say, a little Q&A? What do you think?
Absolutely good.
You know, why not? Mort! Kayaking for Muskies in Nebraska with LiveScope. Well, I commend you. You have a kayak with LiveScope. That's fantastic. I'm finding some suspended in deeper water, a third to one halfway down in the water column, but they're not stationary. They seem to be cruising in their own areas, making circles about 40 yards big. They're just cruising back and forth. They're usually within 40 yards of shallow water with weed edges. Water temp is 46, tossing multiple lures at these fish. They're doing this, and I can't even get a reaction. Does this cruising behavior typically mean they are not likely to bite and should be left alone until another time during the day, like a major or minor? Or does second presentations? He says, very likely. Well, we'll see. Not much pressure on these fish either. Only crack and turn one around with no follow. Oh, the crack and turn one, but no follow. LiveScope, it's one of those things. I said last week, Dr. Bob gave me the report. He said, everybody's talking about what you said 2 years ago about patterning. Well, thank you. You know, patting my own back. I try not to look for suspended muskies. There was that whole sharpshooting deal and nobody knew what we're doing with this thing. They do funky stuff out there in open water. Give me one that's staged on an edge. He's probably hunting. So there's that, right? I'm using LiveScope as a figure aiding and patterning tool more so than anything. Now, I have rolled up on, today, Jay, rolled up on a fish that was 25 feet down. Dude's running bait, and this fish came up like 2 feet, like, what is that? No. Right. Saw it. He's like, meh, meh. No. So, you'll see fish that's kind of respond in these weird, wacky ways that we never knew happened. Those suspended fish that are kind of moving around, I don't know. I've seen fish that kind of run in circles during the spawn. And I don't mean when I'm paying off, because I mean like at dam faces and open water, like, whoa, he's doing donuts, right? You could set your watch to when he'll drive by when you see him in your glasses, right? A foot of water. Home. Oh, there he goes. 30 minutes later, there you go. What that behavior is, I have no clue. But I would say a muskie that is predating is staged near open water bait fish or on a structural edge or cover. I'm not going to waste a tremendous amount of time on suspended muskies that I find on LiveScope. Realistically, what I'm doing with my LiveScope is I'm shooting it down the side of the boat at the perfect angle where I can see my bait coming in as soon as possible. Go, is there one behind it or not? That's it. That's my game. So those weird behavior you'll see are just fish that are kind of just hanging out and doing their thing. That's my take. Maybe it's a certain point we'll find some like elaboration, or heck, maybe these fish that are running in circles 40 yards wide are herding suckers. I don't know. I don't know how to capitalize on that. I've not seen those fish that I've seen in open water doing weird stuff, which I've observed. I've yet to figure out how to catch them.
Yeah, he's also in 46 degree water too. That's cold.
That's cold. But, you know, smacking the brains out of them on crackets and big glide baits in like 42, 43 degree water, Jay.
In the fall?
No, this winter.
Okay.
But the fish I'm targeting are, I'm watching on LiveScope, they manifest off the bottom. Don't shit. When I see a suspended fish, I'm out right now, right? I like suspended fish in the spring and the fall. When I see that, I go, that's catchable. When I see suspended fish in the winter or the dead of summer, I'm kind of like, meh. Right? We equivalate. Okay, so generally, and this is a gross generality, I apologize. Where do we expect muskies to be in the summer, Jay? Vegetation, right? Those suspendos are probably out there just metabolizing or just being muskies. Like, hey, look at me out here hanging out. Hey, what are you doing? Come here often? Whereas in the winter, they might eat. They might just goof around. I mean, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows the answer to that one yet. Where that tech's so new, and I've heard different takes, but I've seen it where you go, oh, one just flew by, just cruising, just doing his thing, weird depth, you know, 25 feet down, just cruised by, and you go, huh, well, if I saw him on my stuff, how many more are down 25 feet just cruising by? Give me one that stayed shallow-ish off cover and structure, and my interest has peaked. More to learn on that, I would say. That's kind of an open-ended question, like observation. Tyler M., he says, meow, when is a steep and sharp break line that quickly transitions from shallow to deep water better or worse than a gradual and sloping transition from shallow water? Which type should I target for pre-spawn trip to Indiana this weekend? Well, Jay, we're just talking water temp. The colder the water, the steeper the break. Right? Seems like we've heard it before. It's an old trope. They move to vertical cover and structure in colder water, right? So if they've not snapped out of their winter patterns, well, that vertical cover and structure might be more dominant. If things are slightly on the warmer end of things, pushing that low 50s, maybe above, who knows, depending on what the weather is. And I'm not saying like your superfluous skimmer read on your transducer based on like the gradient between your transducer and your trolling motor in the back or a submersible, you'll find a switch from hard up and down vertical cover to sloping things, right? It seems like in the winter month, the cold water period, they want a very vertical cover structure situation for quick movements, right? You know, deflate my swim bladder, inflate my swim bladder. I'm up and down like a balloon. So the colder the water, the more vertical I'm looking for as far as my cover and structure. The warmer it is, the more transitional, right? Now, I always want to be targeting areas that are adjacent to deep water holding zones. But you'll find, you know, tapering sand flats that drop off into the abyss or whatnot. Jay, what do you see up there? What is your take on that? Because from a river perspective, right? Let's say we're targeting, you're a matter of days from what I call busky fishing. You'll be throwing a bass lure with no leader and you might snag into one or you might not, or, you know, and that's going to happen here very shortly. We're going to see a lot of Northwoods fish taken early, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know, I should have brought that up earlier. I believe we still have a catch and release bass season right now. So I failed to mention that unless something changed. Check your regs for Wisconsin. But
well,
yeah, you could actually go out and target bass, which is, in my opinion, one step further in terms of like doing some pre-scouting for the year and kind of getting dialed in on on where your body of water's sitting.
If you can or you can't. I mean, let's say you're throwing a three-quarter, not three-quarter ounce, but three-ounce, whatever, this freaking bass spinnerbaits, right? Like a typical bass spinnerbait.
Mm-hmm. You know, 3/8 ounce, half ounce,
You know. So, muskies get caught on those all the time.
And they sure do.
In the river system you're looking at, where do you think, let's say you're bass fishing. We're not talking muskies. Jay's not trying to catch a muskie, but you have caught preseason muskies before. I know that. Right? Not intentionally, but it happens, right? Walleye anglers do it, bass anglers do it, whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do they seem to come on inside turns, outside turns, like deep pockets, or more tapering things during the early season, do you?
More tapering.
Okay. In the river
tapered
system.
Up into flaps. Yeah, flats.
Flaps.
You're looking at, I mean, it depends. I don't get out that early because
it's ice.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's already almost musky season when actually anything's, you know, the ice is off in the last several years. But on a normal year, yeah, you could get out in, you know, May 1st, late April or something like that and target, you know, catch and release bass and go for, you know, occasional sluggish pike or musky that's good, you know, might hit. So, yeah, but it's generally, you know, tapered areas near shallow emerging weed areas is where stuff is starting to stage at.
There you go. Don, I'm interested in your new spinnerbait called Musky Safari Tandem Serial Killer. The host of your video says they need a rod that will throw a lure for double tens. This is towards you, Jay. He's seen a short.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what kind of rod that is. I'd appreciate any advice on this matter. Could you recommend a rod that would be sufficient? I'm 62 years old and been fishing muskies most of my life.
Yeah, that tandem serial killer, he's talking about this spinnerbait that has like a V-shaped spinnerbait arm on it, and it's got two huge hatch blades on it. That thing pulls fairly hard.
Really?
So I don't know if, it's got a lot of resistance. So similar to like a double 10 or, you know, 9-10 stagger kind of, you know, heavy pulling presentation on an inline. So, yeah, break out the big, a rod that's powered in the 2 to 6 ounce. Yeah. Range is going to be sufficient. So, you know, a heavy shield rod, that would be a heavy St. Croix. Yep, something in a 2 to 6.
But an Akuma would probably be an extra heavy.
I'd go double extra heavy almost on that. Yeah.
Akuma runs lighter. Yeah.
They run lighter. Yep. And 9 foot or greater.
I mean, a heavy shield rod. Here's my thing. We talked about it. Beating the horse, Jay.
Ouch.
That horse is beat. I can throw anything I want to on a heavy shield rod. Anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Pounders, double pounders, quad dogs. You know, make it easy. 80-pound braid, 100-plus leader, and just be done with it. You know, it is what it is. But that will get you in the game, Don Damien. Not a musky question, but how do they it's the Jay show. Not a musky question, but it's a musky podcast, so we'll take it there. How do I use jigs / mini jigs? What's a jig or a mini jig, Jay?
Jig or mini jig?
Yeah, he says, how do I use jigs / mini jigs? I have no clue. That's what I got.
Okay. He started out by saying it's not a musky question, though, right?
Correct. So that'd be jigs and mini jigs, Jay.
Okay. Well, if you're walleye or smallmouth fishing, you're in the Northwoods or northern Minnesota or something like that, an 1/8 ounce is a good weight to start with a minnow or leech. Minnow early season, as you get into summer, go with leeches. They're going to run better and stay alive and won't curl up. In the warmer water, in the colder water, minnows work better.
What do you do with them? Bounce them? What do you do?
Yep. Bounce them. You jig them slowly off the bottom. You make bottom contact, and you go up.
How far?
Stay in that 6 to 18 inches over the bottom, generally, if you're fishing deep rocks or something.
Say you're fishing. When I think jigs and mini jigs, I'm thinking a spinning rod, monofilament, right?
Yep. Spinning rod.
How long's the sweep?
The sweep is a foot.
Okay, so you sweep, you rise it up a foot and you drop it down a foot. Do you drop it under tension or you just let it fall on its own until you feel it again?
Not necessarily under tension. You can let that thing flutter more with no tension. So let the jig do its work. It's going to dance and it's going to shake to the side a little bit and go off at acute angles.
Folks, JSE's Mini Jig. And John, hey, I'm a big fan of the podcast. In one of your episodes, you were talking about how wind is a big factor where muskies are staged in a lake. With that said, does wind affect muskies in a river? Abso-frickin-lutely. Absolutely. Today, I continued with wind that was coming upstream, Jay, right? That was causing bait, any shallow bait, to kind of be stifled at choke points and corners, right? So the wind was really howling upstream, and so your small food chain was caught in places. Now, on your body of water, it's the Jay podcast this week. How much does wind play on, say, like the Wisconsin River that you fish all the time? Outside of boat control.
That's interesting. Remember I took you down to the boat landing? I said, you know,
I remember
you kept asking. You're always like, oh, you're exaggerating when you say there's no current. But I said, right. Okay, check this out. And you're right. Like, dang, man, there's really no current.
I remember the time you took me down to the boat landing and you turned the lights off and he starts scratching the back of my
head. Yeah, that's enough of that. Okay.
But then, anyway.
Yeah. But I said, how fast, you know, you're a river current expert, Steve. Talk to me. How, you know, you're like a half mile an hour or something in that range, you know?
You could spit and watch it for 3 days.
Drift. Yeah. So back to your question, you know, sometimes when you get a strong wind blowing one direction or the other, what it's going to do is notice the vegetation tops, you know, what that's doing. And it's like, okay, they're pointing in the wrong direction today and they are laying down. So bait fish kind of bundles on the backside of that and maybe you got to fish differently.
Well, it upstream.
Present differently.
Present differently.
I should say. Yeah.
Which is, I would say this, and I, you know, we did the next level musky fishing kind of like master class, whatever we called it this summer, right? One of the most important videos I want to do this year is musky mechanics, right? I'm just telling you my idea lifetime, Jay.
Okay.
Where we don't talk about the baits, I want to talk about the physicality. Where we cast, how we stand, how we throw, where baits land, where they don't land, and what we're doing with our physical being. In tough conditions like shifting winds, upstream winds, downstream winds, people do not augment these things very often. Right? This is how I cast, and this is what I do. This is how I stand, this is what I do. Mm-hmm. Where do we lead the boat? Do we follow the boat? Right? What's our drift? How is our drift going to affect our mechanics? Will it affect the running depth of our lure? Right? More current. There's so many things I just want to cover there. Where?
Yeah, I like it.
Reading what's happening at that very moment will augment. If you need to go deep, you got to change your stance. You got to change your angle of presentation. People rip rubber one way. Like this very flat linear plane, right? They're the typical rubber presentation, the way it's done. You watch most videos, you see people do it. It's very much like at the mid rib cage, right, Jay? In this flat thing, like where dropping the rod or raising the rod changes the game and running depth. In tough conditions, a foot or two is the difference between getting a follow and a strike or not. So the mechanics and how we address a day, not even just a body of water, how we address the day on any given body of water and how we adjust our mechanics, much less our presentation choices, is huge.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
Because what works on Monday will not work on Tuesday on how we present. Whoa. Okay. So you need to make augmentations. This is overarching for rivers, lakes. I don't care if you're fishing in your neighbor's toilet, right? wherever you fish for muskies, you need to augment your game plan. Not only just intelligent bait choices, but intelligent physical delivery, intelligent musky mechanics to get the most out of those presentations. That's the next big home run heavy hitter I want to work on with you. Do you like it?
Well, you know, once you incorporate Jay's workout program for success into that very idea and concept, you got a winner.
What's it cost a month?
It ain't cheap, baby.
It ain't cheap, baby.
It's like $45 a month.
Xavier, excited to see.
Get it?
Yeah. One boys, all suckers born every minute. Xavier, excited to see you at the Odyssey in Canada. What is your favorite Canadian musky lure? Wow.
Mm.
I don't know if he means a musky lure made in Canada or a lure alike in Canada. So
I think he's asking, like, your most successful, you know, of all your trips over the years.
Blades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Black and orange on Eagle. Black and brown. My favorite thing to throw in Canada is the Titan. And I don't say that because let me take that back. My favorite thing to throw in Canada is Diving Rise. Start with the Suic, Bobby's, Big Daddy's, and the Titan's kind of the culmination of that. But over the years, Diving Rise always treated me really well. You know, I just got a TikTok sent to me today from Eric at Livingston of like Jamie Pastilli. You know, he murdered him on Titans this year. So Diving Rise is my favorite Canadian presentation. My favorite Canadian made lure, though, right? It is, what would it be? Like lure? I don't know. Food Alley. Was Food Alley Canadian, Jay? Are we just up there fishing?
Minnesota, as far as I.
Okay, Minnesota. So my favorite Canadian made bait is going to be the Water Wolf. I think the Water Wolf is a fantastic bait.
Oh, yeah.
That's a killer. Mitch! I fish from the bank on a shallow stretch of river and get snagged nonstop. Any tips for getting less snags with conventional musky gear? Well,
tailgater.
Thank you, Steve Tailgater from Figure Eight Lure Company. Don Jane's basement baits. Don texts me and he's like, I didn't like when that guy said about basement baits. I make my baits in a basement. Figure Eight's been around forever. They make great stuff. So the tailgater is a jerk bait for shallow water. We've talked about in the past, top loading your toad, Jay. If you got to go rubber, top load your toad. I'm not going to take in shallow water a depth rater. I'm not going to take some of these funky things. You got to be careful because the second that thing snags up, there's no way to do if you're bank fishing, right? Buoyant lures and fishing shallow water, you will become very in tune with what is a fish and what is bottom and cover contact, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're losing a ton of lures, get accustomed to what that feels like, right? Where can I run the bait? Where can I not run the bait? I do like, again, back to the Titan. The Titan floats backwards. Diving Rise baits, some of them float funky, but a Titan, you can bang it, and it'll go up backwards, right? Bang up, bang up. Steve Tailgater, if you snag a spinner bait, I'm sorry. What else? Again, top-loaded toads. For years before I had any good ideas in my head, I used to take the Pro Dogs. Remember the original Bulldogs had that single top hook, Jay?
Sure, yeah.
I would take another number 7 single, put it on that hook like I would a spinnerbait.
Mm-hmm.
So I had 2 hooks up on top at least, right? You want to talk about having to pin them and hit them in the face. Razor sharp singles. Right. So don't have lacking hooks. But I caught plenty of muskies on Bulldogs with no trebles on them with 2 big 7s hanging off the top. Right. I remember actually taking scissors and cutting that top fin on them. So that thing would lay right. So I'd have a single with a single trailer like a spinnerbait off its back. You could do the same thing with, say, a whale tail. And that's an interesting thing in shallow water, like these big, big grubby things. Take the hooks off and do a top load on it, right? Single hook or trebles buried in its back.
And a lot of swim baits have that option too, where you can take the bottom treble off and run a top rig system.
So if you bang off the bottom, I mean, I would say the important thing that we can do in shallow water of that nature is learn the sections. Where can I get away with some BS and where can I not?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Let's say it's 4 feet deep. Well, you know, sometimes they won't come up that far. It just won't. I know it sounds insane. You're like, it's a 4 foot long fish. He just has to go, ah, they just won't. Simply won't. Top loading things. Like if I'm talking, I think we do. Did I finally do a video? I think I did an article or whatever. All I'm doing is taking the hooks off the bottom and running some multi-strand wire with crimps on the top of a bait when I say that, right? Buried in soft plastic, and now it's going to just have a flat bottom. So there's that. There's not a lot of shallow water baits. That's why I made the freaking tailgater. Meat grinder as well. The meat grinder is like your big blades for shallow water. The tailgater is your jerk bait. Run buoyant baits, smoker shads, slammers, right? Run buoyant baits where you go, okay, I'm hitting that rock. So every time you cast, say, in said river, and there's a big old rock in the middle, you go, hit it, let it float up, work around it, downstream, upstream, whatever that might be, learn that section. Where are the snags? Where are the possible problems I'm going to run into, right? Mm-hmm. What you run into in shallow water is the propensity of working everything fast to not lose things. That's the curse of shallow water. Well, I better keep the bait up because, well, sometimes you need to slow things down. So suspending baits, slow rising baits.
Yeah.
Back to more of my crap I've turned out. Titans with a mid weight. Bang off the bottom. Let it float up. Bang.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bang. She bangs. She bangs. Come on, Jay. She moves. She
like moves. You said earlier, when you realize that sometimes a muskie won't even move 4 feet.
Yeah.
To eat. You're going to fish more effectively and you will forcibly slow down.
I'm telling you. Well, you fish shallow water in the river. I'll tell you, for somebody, if you're like a muskie that's like always fished inland lakes or Canada, fishing rivers and streams is like a whole other mindset. It's applicable at times for some of the lake stuff we do, but it being a creeker makes you think different. It just does. So buoyant baits, you know, take the hooks off the bottom, put them on the top with some multi-strand wire. You have to be a creative person to really be successful in these scenarios. Timothy B. headed to Canada for the first time this summer for a fully guided week. What should I take? Nothing. That would be my take. If it's your first time in Canada, you've never been, and you paid for an entire week of guided fishing, take nothing. Right? The worst thing you can do on a guide trip is guide the guide. Right? I've never been here, yet I've shown up with my baits that I want to use. No. Right? Don't do it. Leave them at home. And put your faith in the guide. If you paid for a week of guided fishing, then let the guide do his thing. If he kicks butt, he kicks butt. If he doesn't, he doesn't. You're not going to bring something to the table that changes the game, right?
You're not going to outguess that guide on his water, too.
Not in Canada.
Mm-mm.
Because it could be Lake of the Woods, Eagle, or Lac Seul, or somewhere in between. You know, whatever. Canyon. All this stuff. Just go up there. Bring cold weather gear and bring warm weather gear. And bring your rain suit. Bring sunscreen and bring bug spray. Don't take gear. Now, the one thing I'd say is this, and the only caveat I'd say for guided trips that I'd recommend. If you retrieve left-handed, bring a reel. And I hear that all the time. People like always get weird. Like, I'm a left-handed angler. Do you have any? I was like, I have more left-handed reels than I have right-handed reels. I'm probably one of the few, Jay, right? I'm looking at the shelf here in the bait
cave. You probably are, right.
Literally, there's like 40 lefties that are not in the boat, and there's probably 10 lefties in the boat. If you are a left-handed retrieve, bring one. Call your guide and say, do you have left-handed reels? No. Okay, I want to bring my reel. What gear ratio do you generally throw? Well, in Canada, for the this theoretical trip he's going on, well, you need at least a 6.3. Well, if you don't have a 6.3 lefty, purchase one, right? And have it professionally spooled, or ask your guide to do it, or do it yourself, but do it right. Don't guess, right? Because a poorly spooled reel can cost you fish. But that's the only thing I'd say. I mean, I've got a couple of clients of mine that are lefties. If I've never fished with somebody, Jay, and they've never thrown a bait caster, guess what I make them do? Fish left-handed. If I'm right arm dominant, let right eye are dominant, turning the handle with your left hand makes it's like a spinning rod. So if you go from spinning rod to musky fishing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But if you're a lefty, you retrieve left, touch base with your guide, say, hey, do you got them? No, I don't. Okay, I want to bring them. What do you throw? What do you throw? What don't you throw? What's the gear ratio? Okay, 6.3:1, whatever I need to bring. We spool it, or should I have it spooled? What do you throw? Well, I throw Cortland Master Braid, or I throw Suffix, or I throw Next Level Braid or Beast Braid, whatever it is, right? Whatever the guide throws, put it on there so his confidence level is the same. Don't interject your personal preferences on a guide, right? That's like hiring a surgeon and then telling him what to do, right? If you're paying for a week in Canada, don't bring anything. Ask the guide. He might call. The caveat, Jay, call your guide 2 weeks ahead and say, hey, do I need to bring anything? He'll be like, you need to bring 14 walleye toads. Right. If he tells you that, bring them. Right. Because
if he's telling you that, he has a supply problem.
Right.
He's like, on something.
Exactly. He's like, I need 14 walleye toads and I'll knock them off your bill. 2 weeks out, ask. Right. I've done that. Like Herbeck. Remember that one time? He's like, Herbeck was like, bring 4 white beaver XLs. I'm like, I think we got 3. He's like, get 4. I'm like, we have 3. That wasn't because he wanted them to try them, right? It wasn't like, hey, I'm getting funky with these. So maybe, 2 weeks out, enough to get some shipping done from the Mosky shop. Call your guy and say, hey, I'm going to make a tackle run. Is there anything you need? Let me know. That's the only thing I would say. Check on your left-hand reel. The one thing I'll say to this, too, is like, let's say you're a Tranks guy. And talk about reels with guides. Let's say you're a Tranks guy, but your guide is an Abu guy, right? Don't force it. He knows the gear ratio and the line pickup and the corollary between what baits he's throwing. Just trust your guide. Nobody's going out there. Nobody's taking your money out there to take on a wild goose hunt. Sam, when should I focus on small cast back lures? Jay, what do you think?
Well, especially if you've had a follow with a moderately big bait and the fish looked at least semi-interested, go back with a smaller castback lure. That makes perfect sense.
Let me ask you this, because I'm just letting you do your thing tonight. Something for somebody that's not really well-versed with muskies. So it's, first couple of years. You said what the musky looks like. Talk about reading a follow. Just the bare bone basics.
You could describe this better than I could, but there's a multitude of different looks a musky will give you. You got that deep follow where it looks kind of like a log moving slowly in the water. It's like, geez, there's one. Nice fish. Didn't wag its tail, didn't do nothing. It just kind of floated under you or to the side and it's gone. Or it's slowly, that's a disinterested fish. Deeper than the bait, looks negative, right? Barely, barely moving at all. Then there's the fish that comes in that's like just a hyper little charged up little animal, you know, that literally mouth open trying to eat the bait. Right. Okay. Hot as they come. You can throw back probably anything different, and you'll probably get another reaction out of that fish.
A ham sandwich with hooks, yeah.
Right. Flip out a part of a hot dog on a, you know, on a quick set rig, your favorite Smitty rig, you know, with a bobber, and then see what happens. No, I'm joking.
No.
I don't know. And then there's stuff in between. There's stuff in between where the fish comes in, mouth's not open, it's not trying to eat, but it's at the same level, let's say, as the bait's coming in. Like if it's a bucktail, it's like a half under the water. Yeah. Like a linear plane. That fish is behind it, and it's just kind of following, and it kind of reacts as the bait starts to turn, or you start to do your J-turn, which I like to call it at the boat. I call it the J-turn. I don't know why.
The figure eight's out, boys. J-turn.
So there's my three levels of figure eight that I can classify, I guess. What do you think, Steve?
I would say, I mean, literally, you hit the low and the high. Then you get the weird ones in between that are mouthing. Open their mouth and close. You go, well, I never catch those. And you get fish that kind of come in spooky. You know, they're not this mysterious shadow. You just got to dress them. I think it's time on the water. I mean, maybe we'd be well served to talk about it more in depth. But anyway, I got to get on a plane. I'm on a plane.
Yep.
Sorry.
It's a good one.
Well, you know, one of your favorite. We might end with that. Yeah. So I'll report live. Next week, just a couple minutes from the Netherlands. Hopefully I get Jaybird on the phone.
I hope so.
We'll get her lined up anyway. Jaybird, say a Wiedersehen.
A Wiedersehen. Good night, guys. Thank you.